Welcome to my journeys and stories around the old county of Gwent. And while August has been spinning to a close, Rambler has been moving on, fast and purposeful. I'd caught sight of her not long after I left the Unicorn Inn and crossed back over the Rumney, and there was an energy and a passion about her. She was striding along as if she was just drinking everything in, as if she wanted to go down every single lane, up every mountain road. Yes, drinking in the late summer sun and the advancing air of autumn. She often seems to stop, though, and look back over the way she's just travelled. And that's usually when I manage to catch up with her, though she doesn't often stop for much of a conversation. The silver strands in her hair that I first noticed a little while ago are just a little bit more plentiful now, but her eyes are so bright and her limbs look so strong, as if she could walk all the way to the horizon with a heavy pack on her back and a child on each hip if need be. She's often got some dog or other walking along beside her, one that's just appeared from nowhere. Usually an exasperated owner comes into view eventually, waving a lead and shouting. Yesterday I saw an old sheepdog with a bit of rope for a collar just run up and keep pace with her for miles. And then it just sort of left, just as suddenly. Ran off home, I suppose. But I have noticed that it's more often than not a greyhound, or maybe a lurcher, that turns up and trots along. Now, in myth and story, from all across the world, a woman may walk alone with a hound. Walking with the finder of tracks between villages or between worlds, like Hecate. And in myth and in story, a woman may be transformed or may transform herself into a hound, like Ceridwen. Perhaps it's not a surprise that that should be a greyhound, because greyhounds are one of the oldest attested breeds of dog, well over 6,000 years old at least, as we know from bones and sculptures and other works of art. Now in Gwent there is a fragment of a hint of a story, because in Mickleston of Edu, which is just northeast of Cardiff and near the Rumney River, on the Gwent side of the river, there is a standing stone, which is about 3 metres high and 2 metres wide, and it's referred to as the Druid Stone, but its name, as marked on older maps, was Gwal y Filiast. And it is not the only standing stone in Wales that is called Gwal y Filiast, and the name means the lair of the greyhound bitch. And the stone in Mickleston of Edu, or rather the workings on the stone, are thought to date back to the Bronze Age. And how old the name Gwal y Filiast is, we don't know. The stone in Mickleston of Edu is on private land now, so not easy to visit. And my journey's brought me close to this place, and I'm glad of it, but I have to pass on by. And take with me as I go many wonderings about women and hounds walking the ways, and many wonderings about what may be the ancient roots of the lair of the greyhound bitch. But without lingering, I make my way fairly swiftly up from Mickleston of Edu, keeping to the Gwent side of the river now and not trespassing into Glamorganshire, although the border does feel particularly porous here in some ways, and the old families of Gwent clearly had houses and estates on both sides of the border. But I'm going where the Rambler has headed, and that is on upriver to Machen, which is a place in two parts. The old part of Machen is really Lower Machen, which is kind of a little village to itself. It's just off the A468, and it's full of treasures, mainly in the form of beautiful old houses and gardens, and the medieval church of St. Michael and All Angels, which does have a beautiful churchyard. It also has an astonishing interior, only on this occasion I wasn't able to go inside. The whole little village, I mean it's a hamlet really, is delightfully picturesque. And as I walked around, I noticed it was also extremely quiet. And I'd been reading Fred Handow's accounts of the village. We've mentioned Fred Handow and his writings about Gwent before in other episodes. And he was writing about what a gorgeous, picturesque little village it was, and what a delight it was to spend time there. And in his Monmouthshire sketchbook, which was published in the year I was born, he says, "You will love the charming houses, no two alike, yet all proclaiming the dignity of good design and good stone. When you turn aside for this quiet retreat, you breathe at once the air of old and gracious days." And you have to say it's true. It's still true. Even though we're only really about 7 miles or so out of Newport, it really is like a tiny world apart. Handow also speaks about enjoying grand teas in the gardens, and I have to say, when I walked through, not only were there no grand teas seemingly available, but actually there were very few signs of life at all. So I think, like everywhere else, even the picturesque little hamlet of Lower Machen is quieter and more drawn into itself, with less public life. It is easy to spend quite a while there, even though it's such a tiny place, especially on a warm, sunny day. So I spent a couple of hours just breathing out and strolling around. But in the end, it was the lack of available cream teas in the local gardens that made me feel it was time to head off. Coming out of the dream of the village, you arrive immediately at the road, the A468, which follows the River Rumney, really, in this part of it. And again, Fred Handow commented on what a good thing it was that the road missed the village. But the version of the A468 that was waiting for me was busier and faster and more furious than the one that Fred Handow would have observed when he was writing in the late 50s and early 60s. So I had to leap across as the cars thundered by, and then into the quiet lanes on the other side of the road, and made my way on to the river. In fact, I made my way just along the lane to Dreithen, where there is an old stone bridge across the river. And I didn't cross because that way lies Glamorganshire. And I just turned right and started to walk along the bank. And it's easy enough to follow the riverside path back to the other part of Machen, Upper Machen, the main part, if you like. Now, I knew the path because I'd walked down it from Upper Machen earlier in the day. So I was just looping back and retracing my steps. Although when I'd originally set out from Machen, I nearly missed the riverside path because currently there is a great tarmacking happening to the road, and there were steamrollers trundling along just at the very spot where you turn off across the field. So I had walked right past it, being distracted by the machinery. And so I found a spot in the hedge and looked over, wondering where I'd gone wrong. And I saw, a woman walking alone with a dog. Not a greyhound or a mysterious lurcher. No, a woman with a cockapoo, a dog walker, walking back across the field. So I waited to see where she made her way out onto the road, and that helped me find my way. And I think that dog walkers are actually helpful patrollers of many walks. They're kind of local guardian angels. And whereas it's easy to get wrapped up in thoughts of dog poo and wondering whether a dog might be ferocious or not, I actually find the presence of dog walkers almost always reassuring. Finders of the tracks and walkers of the ways. At times where there's often nobody else at all around. Anyhow, the Rumney River here is at the moment a little sad and clouded. The water in what's usually quite a sprightly river bubbling over the stones is low because of the heat and the low rainfall, and sluggish. And the stones on the riverbed are clouded and covered in gunk. And I would hazard a guess that the water quality is not good. Now, in some places, in the sloping field beside the river, there's a lot of Himalayan balsam which hasn't been cut back. And it's growing in amongst the bracken. And I would say that in stretches, the bracken and the Himalayan balsam were vying 50-50 for space, which made me wonder whether, as the climate changes, the Himalayan balsam might win the battle and the bracken of Machen, and other places too, might be superseded by balsam. Just a little way beyond Machen proper, I located a substitute for the genteel garden cream teas of days gone by in Lower Machen. Basil and Rusty's Ice Cream Parlour is a large and friendly and ramshackle place with a generous outdoor area with a nice view. And it's a good place for a coffee, although as an ice cream parlour, it really is what it says it is, and its extensive menu is only for the very sweet-toothed. So, of course, I had to be a sweet-toothed person for a while because it would have been rude not to. Well, you probably know that the wheat harvest this year has been early, because this has been the summer of four heat waves and very little rain. So the fields have been lying clear of their crops for a while. And you should have seen the rambler there in the valley in the evening, with the sun still a while from setting and a half moon sailing in the sky. And in the sun and moonlight, Rambler was galloping. Galloping on a grey mare across a field of stubble. For the joy of it. For the expanse of it. For the invitation of it. She reined in just short of the hedge where I was peering over. And I thought she was going to leap out into the lane. But at the last minute, she veered and turned back away across the field, and she carried on. I stood and watched her for a good while, and when I left, she was still going back and fore and around the field at full gallop, as if in that moment her life depended on it. Next morning I passed that way, thinking it was probably time to make my way on up into the hills and say farewell to Machen Vale, and I looked over the hedge and into the field where Rambler had been running, and there was Rambler still. Whether she'd spent all night in the quiet stubble field, I don't know. But there she was, and there was the mare, lying still as could be in the middle of the field, stretched out like she was the last sheaf, like the Gaseg Vedi, her hands and her feet still for once, her hair braided with the last stray ears of corn. Yes, Gaseg Vedi she is this morning, the harvest mare, made from the last twists, like the ones who were competed for with the throw of a scythe, smuggled back into the farmhouse while the women waited to drench the one who carried her in with beer or water. But there's no scything or smuggling this one, because in a moment or so, when I next pass a gap in the hedge low enough to look over, she's gone. And the memories of harvest home, and the memories of the wind running in the corn like a wild creature, and the memories of the generous corn mother herself are gone too. But I glimpsed them, the smallest glimpse, to be treasured and hung up safe to nourish me for a long time. And so for now I'll say, thank you for keeping me company on my journeys, and I'll see you again on down the track.